Hello, everybody, and welcome to Random Trek Review, the podcast where we analyze, discuss, and review randomly selected Star Trek episodes. My name is Matt. I will be your host for this edition of RTR, and I'm joined by my good friend Andrew, who appears to be sporting a gnarly new tattoo on his face. Have you been hanging out with the Sky Spirit since our last podcast?
Yeah, man, that's where I'm going up to when I'm in the Spirit in the Sky. That's where I go to when I'm in the Delta Quadrant.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. We are back aboard the USS Voyager. We're back in the Delta Quadrant, and I'm looking forward to jumping into this one. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. I don't have any new tattoos, but that's okay. This is kind of a cool episode that we're going to talk about this week. But before we get into it, Andrew's going to give me some feedback on the recall I gave him at the end of our last podcast, and then give me a score out of 5 facial tattoos. Andrew, how did I do?
Well, you knew this one. It almost seemed as if you had recently watched it by the all the points that you got. You got that it was a Chakotay episode. You had the tattoo and the alien symbol connection. You had the fact that Chakotay at some point gets stranded. There's an electrical storm and that the aliens control it. You had the alien-human connection via flashback. You said that it was the grandfather. It was actually his regular father, but it doesn't matter. I'll give you that one anyway. You even had sky spirits. I feel like the only thing really that you missed was the B-plot with the doctor being ill, but it doesn't matter because I'm giving you 5 out of 5 Chakotay face tattoos.
Oh, well, I'll have to pay a visit to the local tattoo parlor then to get all 5 of them...
get 5 of them put on, yeah.
Get all 5 of them inscribed on my face, which it means it's probably good we're doing a podcast and not a video...
Vlog?
Yeah, vlog or whatever it is you call those things. Yes, so this week we're going to talk about Tattoo, which is from Star Trek Voyager Season 2, Episode 9. It originally aired on November 6th, 1995. It guest stars Henry Darrow as Kolopak, Richard Fancy as Alien, Douglas Spain as Young Chakotay, Nancy Hauer as Ensign Wildman, and Richard Chaves as Sky Spirit Chief. It was written by Michael Piller and based on a story by Larry Brody, and it was directed by Alexander Singer. Just in case you didn't get a chance to watch it, I'll give you a quick synopsis here so you have a good idea of what we are talking about. An away team from Voyager is surveying a moon looking for polypharenide when they stumble upon a strange symbol on the ground that Chakotay recognizes from a trip into the jungle he had as a teenager with his father. Chakotay talks to the captain about the symbol and his expedition, and Janeway decides to follow a warp trail leading away from the moon to investigate this strange coincidence. They trace the warp trail to a nearby planet with several polypharenide deposits. An away team heads down in a shuttle to check things out, but they get caught in a huge storm forcing an emergency beam out. But Chakotay is left behind after he loses his comm badge. Meanwhile, the doctor programs himself to be sick in order to show the crew that an illness should not get in the way of their duties, but the plan backfires after Kes, in a rare show of deviousness, extends the doctor's agony by 2 hours. Chakotay recalls back to his youth and is able to make contact with the alien inhabitants, whom he recognizes as sky spirits. Janeway decides to land the ship, but Voyager is caught in a cyclone during the descent. The aliens recognize Chakotay's tattoo and tell him about their previous visits to Earth when they helped nomadic humans they called the Inheritors develop their civilization. They were appalled to learn that this people's lands and culture had largely been lost upon the arrival of other humans from faraway lands. The cyclone clears at the last second, preventing Voyager from crashing on the planet's surface. The aliens see that they have nothing to fear from the humans on Voyager and allow them to leave peacefully with some of the polypharenide that they needed. All All right, let's start off by just giving a quick overall impression of the episode. Andrew, what did you think?
I think this is pretty much like Star Trek by the numbers, or maybe Voyager by the numbers. You go to a planet, there happens to be something that is very specific to one character. It really focuses around them. There's some other things happening on the ship, which is usually around other characters. There's not really much crossover. In this case, I felt like the Doctor's storyline, which I would call the B storyline, was more interesting, giving himself the flu and kind of dealing with that whole, you know, experiencing illness for the first time. Whereas the Chakotay stuff didn't really resonate with me too much. I thought that it was interesting, but like I kind of referred to last year, or not last year, last episode, that it may be a bit of a stretch. And we'll get into that a bit more as we go. What about you?
I liked it overall. I thought it was good. Not a, you know, super fantastic episode, but a pretty solid one. I like that we finally got a glimpse into Chakotay's kind of backstory and his past. I feel like in the first season they didn't really explore his character very much. I mean, this is a pretty deep dive into his past, and I kind of like how they went about it, and I like sort of where they went with it. I also really like when Star Trek explains some of these like really big sort of historical mysteries, you know, by using an alien influence or whatever. So I like that part at the end that they threw in, and I also thought the Doctor making himself sick was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah,
so,
good comedy there.
Yeah. Do you have any like memories of this episode that stuck out, or do you remember the first time you ever saw it?
Yeah, I probably saw this in college, but like I said, it's very, very typical, and so I feel like it just blends in with the rest.
I probably would have seen this one during the original run. The first two seasons, I was pretty religious about watching Voyager every week, so I imagine that's when it would have been. I mean, it did stick out a little bit because it was a pretty deep dig into Chakotay's past, but I mean, it's other than that, it's kind of it's not really that standout of an episode. That's really the only thing I that made me remember it. So let's move on to a little bit of background and development information that we were able to dig up for this episode. This was originally intended to be included in the first season of Voyager, but I guess the writers kind of had a tough time getting from the initial sort of idea and initial outline for the episode to like a fully developed script. So it kind of got put on the shelf for a little while, and then I guess at some point someone came back to it and decided to go with it and get it, make it into an episode.
Yeah, you almost can kind of sense it when you go back and watch the first season of Voyager, or even just go back and look at what episodes there were. If you remember, I think third and fourth episode after Caretaker is almost the exact same thing. There's I think one's called Parallax, one's called Time and Again, and they're both kind of time traveling, like recent time travel kind of paradoxes or paradigms that are very similar. And you almost can kind of sense like, yeah, maybe there was another episode that just never took off. And so I think a lot of the first season of Voyager is them kind of feeling their, you know, getting their feet into the idea. And I think also there was a short run, 16 or 17 episodes as well for season one. So I'm not really super shocked that this one was supposed to be there and didn't end up being there. Because like you mentioned, I mean, up until now, it's kind of strange to go the entire first season without ever really exploring your first officer.
Yeah, I don't know what those problems were. I didn't really get, wasn't really able to get into a lot of details about what they were struggling with. But yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go an entire season, albeit a shortened one. I think it was 17 episodes was the first season, and yeah, they really didn't. There were really no Chakotay episodes in that first season. He was just
not that I can think of. No,
he was just there.
Yeah, like that's and it's weird too because the Maquis was such a pivotal piece, right? So the fact that they didn't really explore that deeply is a bit strange and maybe a bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well, at least they didn't miss it completely. Now, Michael Piller did, early in season two, he sort of picked this one up, and he was really drawn to the idea of sky spirits and liked that there was a... It was an opportunity to explore Chakotay's character. I guess early in the production of season two, the showrunners were looking for story ideas. I guess they were really kind of struggling to figure out what to do, and this one... was one that Michael Piller remembered, and so I guess this was like his, he just decided he wanted another crack at it, and so they were like, all right, fine, go write this episode. And
seems very strange to me that this early on in Voyager, this is a very different idea. Smaller ship, smaller crew, 70,000 light years from Earth, completely new species, completely unique situation. And yet, yeah, you do kind of read on occasion, like, oh, and we had no ideas of what to do, or even just using reasons to get Romulans in there, or using reasons to get Klingons in there, or, you know, using Barclay in episodes and stuff. And it makes you kind of wonder, shouldn't there be more ideas? I mean, I guess maybe they eventually get there with the Borg and the Species 1372 and everything like that. But yeah, you definitely get the sense that early on in Voyager, they didn't really have a great idea of what they wanted to do. And sometimes it just feels like they could have done this in the Federation quadrant.
Yeah, it's kind of odd that they kind of had this like completely blank slate where they could really do whatever the heck they wanted. And they kind of
chose not to, yeah.
Well, they were struggling to come up with ideas. So I was a bit surprised when I sort of read that this was almost like a Save Voyager kind of episode, and that they were really having that much trouble early on. Because right. I was pretty young, so I didn't really pay a lot of attention to like the news or anything. I just sort of watched it and enjoyed it. But yeah, I don't know. I was a bit surprised to hear that.
Yeah, and I mean that kind of. Yeah, it kind of goes into the next point that you've got here, where the B story was suggested by Robert Picardo. Like, he's got better ideas than the people writing the show, which doesn't really spark much faith in this writing team at this point anyway, if we went back to the 90s. Yeah, it's very strange, and I feel like a lot of the villains that they did come up with, not that this one has any villains per se, but, you know, the Kazon and stuff like that, I felt like they didn't really hit home very early on.
Yeah, well, the Kazon, in theory, like the sort of tribal civilization that's like always at each other's throats, sounds like it would be pretty cool. But they
yeah, it sounds like Mad Max or something, right?
Yeah, but they didn't quite get it right.
Yeah, which I mean, maybe that's what's very difficult writing a big 40 minutes a week series, right? That could be a very difficult thing to do.
Getting back to the Doctor story. It was actually his original suggestion was actually that Janeway was the one that reprogrammed him to teach him a lesson. But Piller changed it so that the Doctor like challenged himself, and I thought it kind of worked that he, because just the way that he decided to go at it was like the Doctor was gonna be like, you wimpy biological people, you're always letting your illnesses get in the way of your duties. I'm going to show you how to deal with illness and all this stuff. And I thought it was kind of, it was a little bit more impactful for him to have that attitude at the beginning and then see him like cowering at the end, like, please someone save me, I'm still sick.
Well, and I guess the Doctor in the early seasons is very unempathetic.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Later season, he softens a lot. But yeah, early season Doctor, he is very sarcastic. He's very cold. He's very curmudgeon-y. So I feel like it fits with the character that he's kind of rising to meet the challenge.
Oh, totally, yeah. And Picardo also suggested that they start it with that scene where he's treating Ensign Wildman, who is very pregnant at this point, and just should, like... no sympathy
right,
whatsoever,
yeah.
And I actually thought that scene, like, if I wasn't, like, it's a pregnant woman, so I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But, like, if that happened in real life, I would be appalled.
Yeah, true, yeah. He only gets away with it because he's the Doctor and he's beloved.
Now, the last little bit that that we were able to dig up, now, Michael Piller wrote this episode with a very quick pace compared to previous episodes of Voyager, and, There weren't a lot of long shots, and it sort of moved back and forth between the flashbacks and what, and you know, the mystery of the aliens and the doctor's thing at sort of a quicker pace. And the reason he did this is because I guess he'd been like studying other shows at the time, and he noticed that they were sort of doing the same kind of thing. So he tried writing this episode as like a trial to be like, okay, you guys, we can do this too. Other shows are doing it. And I mean, I don't know if it quite worked.
If this is what he considers quick, then I feel like Star Trek Discovery would put him in a coma. Like, this is, maybe it's quickened up from Next Generation, maybe it's quickened up from the original series, but I mean, if you compare it to today's standards, it's not even close.
If this show is like at a running pace, like today's shows would be at like warp 9.
9.9. Yeah. It's got the Voyager warp drive in it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way watching shows today, but that is kind of the reason why I like this show, and I like going back and seeing some of these older things, because it makes you take a slower pace to it. It makes you digest it at a slower pace. Sometimes I feel like, you know, if you watch a really good episode of old Star Trek, it's almost like sitting down to like a nice like Thanksgiving dinner. You know, you take your time, you cut your turkey, you got your gravy, all the fixings, you've got like a nice wine to go with it, and it just, you know, you end up feeling very content at the end. Sometimes with like Star Trek Discovery and TV shows nowadays, it's kind of like the fast food, snarfing it down your face, and you just end up with a big bellyache at the end. That's the difference, I feel like. This was, you know, this was just a regular Tuesday night dinner.
All right, moving along to some plot points. Before we really get into like sort of a blow-by-blow account here, I wanted to start by just a quick discussion of like the general plot. And we kind of mentioned this at the end of last podcast and right off the bat here, but I'm just going to ask the question. Is it far-fetched? Is it a little too coincidental, the way what happens?
Yes, it is. The reason why I say it is this. Star Trek is science fiction, right? It is supposed to be based out of reality, right? It's supposed to be, if we were to continue, it's obviously different because we didn't go through a eugenics war and all this kind of stuff, but it's supposed to be kind of us in the future. What would it look like? It is not science fantasy. We've had this conversation before, right?
Yep.
The warp bubble is supposed to be kind of rooted in physics. A lot of the medical stuff is supposed to be rooted in real medical stuff. If you look at the size of the known universe, or even just the known galaxy, and you split it off into the quadrants, like what we are expected to believe is true for Star Trek, the likelihood of stumbling upon a planet that is inhabited by aliens who also visited Earth multiple times and is connected to the family unit of a teenage boy who eventually joins Starfleet and then goes rogue with the Maquis and then ends up on the USS Voyager as the first officer in the quadrant that's tens of thousands of light years away. And they happen to stop off at this planet looking for this particular resource, and it's the same. It's just a little too far. It's just a little bit, you know, you have to basically give that conceit straight away.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's very, very far-fetched and very, very convenient that this all comes together. Like you said, the galaxy is humongous.
And the thing about this is I actually don't mind this if it was the NX-01. Because the NX-01 couldn't go that fast. It couldn't go that far. So if it went to a planet, then that planet would realistically be relatively close to Earth in a time where starships didn't go that fast. So if they were going to be visited by a culture, it would make sense for that series. But for Voyager, you have to really just pretend like they're not in the Delta Quadrant for this episode.
It's very, very convenient, yes. And yeah, you pretty much have to put that out of your mind as this episode unfolds, because otherwise you probably not enjoy it very much.
No, and I mean, like, so when I do my notes for these, I kind of do the pre-titles, the first act, the second act, And in the second act, the very first thing that I have written here is the doctor programming the illness is a great idea. And then I have like, comma, the main plot is not gripping me at all. So, I mean, if you're going to do something like this, I feel like it should be good. And I mean, I'm not saying this is a bad episode yet, but I'm just saying that it didn't really grab me, this Chakotay storyline. Even though I feel like I'm interested in his past, I just didn't think this was the best way to do it.
The next thing I wanted to kind of like a broad discussion about is the doctor thing. I guess talk about it as a whole. What did you think of this? Like, did you like the doctor making himself sick to prove a point?
Yeah. No, I definitely think that. I think this is the best part of the episode. I feel like it wouldn't have been crazy to make this an entire episode, although Voyager tends to go to the doctor a lot, so maybe they don't want to do that too often. I think that it makes sense. I think that because you're seeing such growth in the doctor, and it's probably one of the best character arcs on Voyager, it's just kind of like this becoming sentient and everything like that. So, I mean, experiencing illness is definitely a part about being human and being alive, and that's kind of what the doctor is striving towards, so I felt like it made total sense. And I guess, you know what, as a little trivia question for you, do you know the other episode where they talk about Lavodian flu?
Oh dear, that's a real...
It's a real deep cut question.
Oh my. I couldn't even hazard a guess.
Well, I will tell you that the Lavodian flu is apparently a common Federation illness. It lasts around 29 hours. It was also in the Enterprise episode, Affliction.
Ah, Enterprise.
I believe that might be... Is that the one with Brent Spiner, maybe? With Eric Soong?
I don't know.
Don't remember that much, but yeah, I don't know. Kind of a neat little small connection there. But I think that this is the best part of the... I think this is the best part of the episode for me. How about you?
I loved it. I loved everything about it. The setup with Ensign Wildman was absolutely hilarious. Although I would never wish that to happen to anyone in the real world. just like him constantly blowing his nose and like having the like sick voice going on. And I love the panic that set in when Kes like very deviously extended it by 2 hours without telling him, and he's like frantically like calling the bridge like, "You have to help me, I'm still sick, something's wrong."
That's true. I feel like, yeah, if you were sick and you only knew it was gonna last an hour, then that's probably, you know what I mean, it's not gonna be as bad as not knowing when it ends. Because I feel like when you're sick, it feels like you have always been sick and you'll never be healthy. And when you're healthy, you never really feel like you'll ever be sick, or you can't remember being sick the last time. So, yeah, I thought that was really good.
Yep, it was. I thought it was great. I love when they do sort of kind of goofy things like that. It's just it's very good. Now, I also wanted to talk about the flashbacks. We're pretty early in the series here. We're like early in season two, and we don't really know much about Chakotay, but through the flashbacks, we learn a lot about him here. Did you like the way that they used them in this episode?
Not really. I feel like the concept was kind of boring. Also, in the pre-title, I have another trivia question for you. Not really a trivia question, I just have a question. So, when the tribes people kind of show up, Chakotay starts gathering up some firewood, and somebody mentions that, "Why aren't you using the magnetite fuel?" Have we ever seen that before? Because it's kind of mentioned in a way that's like, nobody uses firewood on it at all. But then I'm thinking about like Darmok, and I'm thinking about all these episodes where they have a fire and they use wood, and it's very obvious that there's like a ton of Enterprise episodes where they, you know, are lost on a planet and they have to gather wood. So is this... Yeah, like there's so many, right? Yeah. So is this just a pointless technobabbly thing to remind you, like, you're in the future?
I would say it's probably just useless technobabble, because I don't believe I've ever heard anything about fuel before. I don't remember. Yeah, you're right. Like, anytime they're, like, stranded on a planet and they have to go in, like, survival mode, it's always, like, just, you know... rub two sticks together until...
Yeah, yeah, and even they, even when they have, like, I'm thinking of even in Deep Space Nine when they had the food and stuff like that, like the ration packs and stuff, but they never had any fuel, like a special futuristic fuel.
Yeah, I don't seem to remember that, no.
Oh, continuity.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought the flashbacks were pretty effective in this episode. I felt like they didn't really take up too much time.
Well, they did do that fast editing.
Yeah, because it was written at a fast pace, so they didn't have a chance to take up. But I mean, they were relatively short, but I thought they gave kind of important backstory and gave you sort of a glimpse into what life was like when Chakotay was younger. And then later on in the episode, they actually sort of led to how Chakotay was able to contact the aliens in the present. So I felt like they were kind of relevant to the, you know, what was going on at the time. So I thought it was kind of nice.
Let me ask you a question about, did this have to be the exact same people that were from Earth and visited Earth on occasion? Because, like, if it was the Delta Quadrant and they had gone down to a planet and there was, like, an ancient civilization or like tribal people or a symbol that was similar to the one that he remembered from a childhood, and he had these flashbacks and there was something that he learned in his youth about his tribe that he could use to connect to this tribe that was light years away, and they could use it as like, no matter where you are, no matter where you grew up from, like, your tribe is special to you, and that was like the message and the moral. Would it not work the exact same way?
Well, I suppose it's possible.
Is that a better idea, a worse idea, or just a different idea?
Well, it's different. I don't know. I feel like being the same aliens, I guess it kind of gives a bit of credibility to, like, at the end when he, like, stripped all his clothes off and was like, lay down your weapons and all that stuff. I think it makes it a little bit more credible because he was doing things exactly the way as he remembered doing it, and it worked then, and then it worked in the episode. So, I mean, I guess...
It makes it credible if you can buy that, well, there's a alien species that travels 65,000 light years to visit aliens and then encourage them to move south.
I guess it requires a leap of faith one way or another.
Right, true. I think that my biggest beef with this whole story arc is not necessarily the flashbacks, but it's actually kind of the stuff on the planet. Because I feel like even from the very beginning when they send them down, Janeway says, you know, you should take so-and-so, so-and-so, and Neelix. And I was kind of like, why are you bringing Neelix on this mission? It makes no sense. And then he gets attacked by a hawk at one point. I don't know. There's something about the stuff on the planet that just doesn't seem to connect as much to the flashbacks as I think that they wanted me to feel.
Yeah, the whole thing on, like, the whole planet thing, there was something a little bit off there. It was...
like the lightning bolts looked bad, and they had, like... I felt like these aliens came to Earth, and they communicated, and they talked with humans at that time, so they have a pretty good understanding of them, and they know what they look like, and they probably have technology that allows them to read the DNA and stuff like that. So once they came to their planet, wouldn't you think that they would be going, oh, hey, guys, like, remember us? Like, I don't know.
Well, there was that part at the end where they were, like, when they went back and visited later on and found out that, you know, things were not... The Native Americans had been, like, overrun by Europeans, and the respect for the land and the environment was sort of lost. They were like, oh, these humans are terrible. Look at them. Right. Look at what they've done. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes
sense. Their hands of them.
Yeah. I don't know. There was something a little bit strange on this planet of theirs. Okay, one little thing I wanted to touch on quickly. Janeway and Chakotay had that conversation in the Ready Room about Chakotay's childhood, and then Janeway's like, oh, there's a warp trail leading away from this moon. Should we follow it? Was that like a smart idea or a really dumb idea?
Again, there's a couple of things in this episode that just don't make sense. Like, I love in Star Trek when they go to regulations and protocols, but I almost kind of feel like they need to write them all down, and then when future Star Trek shows come out, follow them, and if they want to break something, they need to have, like, a real reason for doing it.
Yeah, I thought, like, when Janeway was like, oh, there's a warp trail, maybe we should go check it out, I was like, well, I don't know if that's the greatest idea. Like, it seemed kind of like a wild goose chase to me. Like, totally. Okay, maybe that ship, like, is also looking for the same ore, and maybe they know where to find some, so maybe if you follow them, you'll find it yourself, but, like, that seems kind of risky to me.
How, at this point in Voyager, how many species have they encountered that were super friendly and super helpful?
Close to zero.
Zero, maybe one. There are way more episodes of Star Trek where you find hostile people than when you find friendly people. It's actually a great idea. If I was like, you know, I had to write a Star Trek episode in order to, like, pay the rent for this month, like, that would be my idea. My idea would be a civilization where you run into them and they're just wonderful and you work collectively to solve a problem. Because I don't think it's ever been done.
Yeah, well, I'm sure maybe if you dig really deep, you might be able to find an example here and there. Eventually, they go to the planet. The away team eventually makes their way to the planet, even though it was not easy to get down there. One thing that was kind of odd to me, and I think you already kind of touched on this, is that Neelix gets attacked by the Hawk. The thing that I was kind of struggling with, like, do you think that Hawk was, like, under the alien's influence? Or was it just, like, a weird accident? Because I don't, like, it seemed so pointless for the for Neelix to get attacked by this, like, Hawk that's soaring through the air, and then all of a sudden it just, like, swoops down and, like, tries to, like, eat his eyeball.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, like, a lot of people don't like Neelix. I actually don't mind him. But in my notes here, I have why bring Neelix, and then I had useless character comic relief? And I it wasn't funny, it wasn't action, it was just kind of there. And yeah, I guess are these tribal aliens so much so powerful and so technologically advanced that they can control the animals on the land, or were they trying to make like a Native American people? Animals are very important, and spirit animals and all that kind of stuff. So was this trying to show that they had control of them, or that your animal's important, or Neelix was not worthy? Like, I don't have any clue what this was about.
Well, given how, like, afraid they seem to be of outsiders, I thought maybe they, like, were trying to, like, scare them away.
Okay.
But, like, even that doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like, they want to scare them off, why would they have a hawk?
A hawk doesn't, yeah, guy. Exactly. Yeah, on a giant monster or something.
Like, why wouldn't they send, like five grizzly bears after them or something?
Yeah, and, like, did they get that hawk from Earth? Like, they took it back with them? Or their ecosystem also made the exact same kind of birds that we have here? But they're, like, attack Neelix.
Like, trained attack hawks?
Yes. I don't know.
I don't know. It was kind of a puzzle. Like, that whole thing was just very strange and puzzling to me.
I mean, like, is this a problem with the Neelix character? Is that basically, when they picked him up, it was like, it's good to have a guide. But what was his range? Like, how far could he go before he wasn't really useful anymore?
Like, there was an episode about that.
Oh, is there? Okay, I kind of don't really remember that.
There was an episode where they, like, reached this, like, space station, and he was, like, desperately trying to, like, acquire a map and knowledge of the region of space that they were moving into. Because he's like, I've never been there. I don't know what I'm doing. Captain Janeway's not going to know what to do with me because I'm going to be useless.
Okay, so I don't remember that, but they actually did have that happen.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, the Talaxian space has, like, an outer limit that he had never really reached.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Considering I was kind of knocking the Voyager writers a little bit earlier, that actually is a good idea.
So a little later on, they find this artificial structure, and they noted that it was made of an alloy they had never seen before. Given that the transport... Okay, first of all, were you surprised that they made it? Given that the transporters weren't working and the storms were, like, very intense.
No, I mean, I knew they were going to make it because I feel like the whole idea was that they had to meet up with the other tribes people or the symbols.
Now, were you surprised that they found this, like, weird structure just sort of, like, in the middle of the jungle?
Yeah, I guess not. I mean,
they're going to find something.
Yeah, this is my least favorite part of the whole episode, was this whole bit with the away team and the planet, and nobody knew why they were getting attacked and stuff like that. I also feel like they did a lot of Voyager episodes where they were looking for a particular ore or a particular fuel or a particular something. It's kind of overused.
Well, what did they need the polypheronite for? They didn't even really explain it. It was just like, Torres was like, oh, we need this stuff.
Yeah, no, Voyager is very techno-babbly. They solve a lot of problems. They create a lot of problems with just words that don't necessarily make a lot of sense together.
Is polypheronite even like a real thing?
I wouldn't think it is. Like poly, many, and pheron, like iron, like many irons. I don't know.
You can do a quick Google search. Yeah. For the wonders of modern technology. We can check it.
No, 30 I'm not seconds here. For polypheronite.
Okay, so it's not real.
Hey, Andrew here, and I just wanted to say thanks for listening to Random Trek Review. If you want to get some more Star Trek goodness, then make sure to check out the RTR blog at randomtrekreview.blogspot.com. You can also find us on social media, iTunes by searching for Random Trek Review, Twitter by searching at Rando Trek Review, and Instagram at Random Trek Review. Or if you just want to use the old style way of emailing questions, comments, or just gripes in general, then feel free to drop us a line at randomtrekreview@gmail.com.
Okay, there's another huge storm, which seems to happen a lot on this planet. Now, Chakotay gets left behind. Everyone else makes it out, but Chakotay got like hit by the tree and it knocked his comm badge off, which almost never happens. How convenient was it that he just happened to be left behind?
You know how I feel about convenience in this episode. Yeah, that just kind of adds to it, right? The one person that gets left behind is also the one person that is, you know, has this real deep connection to this tribal people, right? So,
yeah, it wasn't Torres, it wasn't Tuvok that got knocked over, like pinned to the ground by this tree.
No, it's the one person. Yeah, you have to really extend your disbelief here.
Yes, that's very true. So, now Janeway, you know, they're trying to, you know, he's left behind, and Janeway's like, oh, we gotta send out another way team to find him. And, you know, they can't beam down because of the storms, they can't take a shuttle because it's just too risky. So Janeway decides, let's just land the ship. How terrible an idea was that?
I love Janeway. I think that she's a great captain. I think that Voyager is a great show, but this is an episode where, like, nothing seems to make sense. It's like the Bizarro episode where, you know, why are you going to land the ship to pick up one person again? I just think that, like, they did land a shuttle. And then that's the other thing I don't like, too, is that they landed the shuttle, but then they beamed them back up. Mm. So, like, why can you beam up but not down? I mean, you could have beamed down, like, send another shuttle down with, like, five people, maybe, and try to find them. I think that landing the ship is a terrible idea for the exact reason that happens in the episode, where they end up in a massive storm and it's going to crash the whole ship. So we must have talked about this episode at one point, because I remember a few weeks ago we did a trivia question, how often do they land the ship? And this must have been one of the ones. I guess they don't actually land it, though.
No, they didn't actually land it, so I don't know if it's...
I don't know if everyone actually showed up on it, but... terrible idea, and... yeah, the landing of the ship should be very, very used sparingly.
Well, and ultimately it was. I think the answer to that trivia question was they only landed it four times?
Yeah, it wasn't landed very frequently. Yeah. This time they kind of tease it, but... the reasoning for landing here doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's not even as if it was a great planet to land on, because it's mostly forest and stuff.
Yeah, it was a terrible idea for all sorts of reasons. They tried to reach the planet, and every single time it was nearly disastrous. But hey, let's land the ship anyway. Let's try it. Let's go for it.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I guess so they get stuck in the cyclone. Rocking the shuttle and the lightning bolts in front of the cave and the wind and the storm, spooking away somebody because you're like xenophobic or what have you is one thing, but to purposely try to crash the ship that has hundreds of people living on it seems very questionable by the aliens.
Well, they're very xenophobic.
Yeah, but like, remember there was that episode of Next Generation where they kept wiping the minds of everybody and sending them away, and but Data kept Data could remember, so they kept kind of falling into this cyclical problem. Like, I kind of think that's a more interesting way of kind of being xenophobic than to just kill them. Like, yeah. That seems like not very forward thinking for a, you know, culture that's been around obviously for a long time.
Yeah, just, I don't know, it just seemed like a really bad idea, and I mean, it turned out to be a really bad idea in the end as well.
True.
Not surprisingly.
Very true.
Now, Chakotay eventually does enter the cave, and he makes contact with the aliens. He can't understand them at first, but one of them has a translator, so they are able to have a little chit-chat about Earth and whatnot. I mean, I found the aliens to be very, very disappointing in this episode. They were very technologically advanced, obviously, because they can somehow control the weather and create storms out of nowhere. They must have been for some time, because we found out at the end that they visited Earth 4,000 years ago. But, I mean, the little structure thing on the surface, it seemed pretty generic looking to me. Yep. I mean, yeah, it was made of an alloy that we'd never seen before, but, it didn't really look all that high tech. And eventually, when they do meet Chakotay, it's just in, like, some cave.
Star Trek cave.
The standard Star Trek cave. I mean, were you hoping for something more when they finally did meet up with them? Because I definitely was.
Yeah, I was. I was just hoping for it to be done. This did not do anything for me. I feel like, yeah, by the time we get to the end and they're in the cave and he's doing the strip down and stuff, I was about done with this whole story arc. I was happy for it to be done. The aliens weren't really super interesting. The only thing that was kind of funny was the one alien was like Mr. Lippman from Seinfeld.
We'll talk about that later on. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, that was about the most interesting thing.
Well, fair enough. I mean, that is pretty interesting. I was really hoping we would get something more than just like a generic looking alien in a cave. These are obviously very technologically advanced aliens, and I don't know. I was very disappointed at the end when we finally met up with them, and they're just like, you know, just
yeah, they didn't have much to say or do. Like it was,
yeah. I kind of can get that they might want to be sort of low key because they obviously are aliens that have a deep respect for like nature and. You know, the environment, but it just seemed like when he ends up walking into a cave and they just sort of like appear, it's like, oh, that's it? Really?
Did they even get the ore at the end? I guess they did.
I believe there was a line at the end when Chakotay was like just about to leave that the alien was like, oh, I'm sorry, we couldn't give you all the ore that you needed, but we were able to give you some that we can spare, or something like that.
Yeah, something to that effect, so it makes it so there's at least some point to it.
Now, the one thing that I really liked about this episode was the end when the alien kind of explains how they visited Earth 4,000 years ago. They came across these like nomadic humans that sort of shared similar values to them, and they really took a liking to them and decided to, you know, kind of help move them along in their development a little bit. And then it turns out that these nomadic humans moved into what I presumed to be North America and are, you know, the people that we now know as Native Americans. I thought that was kind of cool, and I really like when Star Trek, I think I mentioned this already, that when they, you know, you have these like mysteries in history that no one can solve, and then Star Trek steps in and says, right. Oh, it was these aliens, or it was whatever, right? Does this really make sense to you? I mean, I know we've talked about how convenient it is, right. But I mean, if you can put that aside, like, does it make sense?
To me, this just screams of Earth is not that important. Earth is not that special. And I mean, I think there are different people and different religion views on this, but I think that it's like pretty widely accepted in like the astrological societies and communities and stuff that like Earth is not any more special than anywhere else. So the idea that all of our great achievements and all of the things that we have done would have to have come from other species introducing it is not necessary, right? So, like, I guess, so the idea here is that these Native Americans would have just stayed in the north if it wasn't for these aliens, and then you wouldn't have them coming down into North America, like through the Russia and
the land bridge.
Land bridge.
I think the idea is that they kind of,
or is this earlier? Like, this is Native Americans. Like, it's not African Native Americans.
I think it was during like the Ice Age. I think is sort of what they're getting at, because I think it was they may have said it straight out, or it was like implied that they didn't have like spoken language, and so the aliens were able to like help them develop spoken language so that they were able to better communicate, sort of as like their gift for being like, oh, you people are cool. You share the same values as us. You respect, you know, the land and your environment. So we're going to help you along.
Right. And I don't mind that. And I do agree that I do like when they solve certain mysteries through Star Trek. But I feel like different languages developed at different times. And it's very well established that language is something that evolves. You don't need to have it be gifted to you from an alien species, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have so many languages on the planet, and they all don't stem from one language, I don't think. I think they are all kind of like branches of one another. So this would be just the Native American language that they gave them?
I think that's how like
the ability to have language.
I think I would interpret it as they like would give them sort of the, I believe the term is lingua franca like the Native American peoples.
Okay. I'm not against that then. That's actually not bad. So is this a mystery that I'm not really aware of? Like, nobody really knows how Native Americans got into North America other than like the theory that they went across the land bridge?
I think the mystery is sort of how their culture developed, because it's not really, like, if you look at all of, I mean, I'm not an anthropologist.
Right,
don't take this as scientific fact, but I believe that if you look at Native North American cultures, like whether it's North American, South American, Central American, they're all sort of related, but there's sort of this mystery of like, because they're not related, because if you compare them to other cultures, they're not really a lot of similarities. And I think the mystery is sort of like, how did their culture develop in sort of in isolation?
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
But again, I'm not an anthropologist, so that it may not be totally correct. But yeah, I believe that's sort of what they were going for, as far as like explaining how these aliens were influenced.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of cool. I kind of like that. Now with that piece of knowledge, I kind of like it a little bit more.
I thought it was good. I think the sort of, to me, the best example of this is the 37s. Because, I mean, Amelia Earhart disappeared and no one has any clue what happened to her.
Right.
And then Voyager, you know, the Star Trek swoops in and says, oh, these aliens kidnapped them and took them away. And I think that's probably the coolest example. That's the one I like the most. But I think this one was decent.
Yep. And I mean, that's kind of, I think sometimes, with Star Trek, especially with big, deep fandom, people can get really, you know, passionate about things and stuff, but at the end of the day, it is supposed to just be for fun, right? And so, the 37s, I don't know, I bet you there's lots of people that don't like that one, but I agree, I do like that. It's kind of a fun way to kind of do like an alternate history kind of thing and do it with Star Trek. Again, though, I feel like that might not have been the best Voyager, but that's whatever. Put that to bed. I've already gone off on that enough.
We'll deal with that one when we pull it out.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about the cast and characters in this episode. Let's start with Kolopak, who is Chakotay's father. He has one other appearance in Basics Part 1. He appears in a vision quest that Chakotay has. Now, what did you think of Kolopak in this episode? And this is probably like the biggest role. Like, this is the where we see him the most. So,
I thought he was okay. I didn't really have much thought about him. Like I said, I didn't think that this whole kind of concept grabbed me. So in terms of the father character and stuff like that, I didn't think that it was, you know, super great. And did you know, where this actor has been seen in Star Trek elsewhere.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't think I actually looked into that. You'll have to enlighten me.
He is one of the admirals in Conspiracy.
Really?
Yeah, he's the Vulcan admiral.
Wow, that's... I'm surprised.
But I mean, that would have been...
Season one or two of...
Yeah. And so that's going back, 5 years. You would have looked a lot different.
I mean, I thought the actor did a pretty good job portraying Kolpak as like sort of a traditional Native American who continued to follow his people's traditional beliefs, even though a lot of people in the 24th century have sort of passed those by. I liked that there was a tension between him and the young Chakotay. I thought it was pretty believable that Chakotay was as a young man was not really interested, and his father was a little disappointed, and I thought that the interplay between them was not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's one of those kind of occurrences where he's a father figure who is, like, really a father figure, right?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, when you compare him to, like, Worf and stuff, is kind of nice to see. Yeah, he had kind of, like, an expedition vibe, though. Like,
yeah,
I was looking up, so this actor is Puerto Rican, but yeah, even his look didn't look like a typical Native American like you would normally see in sitcoms at this time. You know, like there wasn't they didn't do like a lot of the headdresses and all the braids and all that kind of stuff. Do you think that would have added to it or not really?
To me,
they're not really that kind of Native American, right?
Yeah, I feel like that would have maybe kind of undermined it a little bit, because that's really stereotypical kind of North American
Native. Like Journey's End.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought it I thought the way they went with it was pretty good. I mean, you got to remember it's the 24th century, and I think some of that traditional, the headdresses may have kind of disappeared by then, but the core values and beliefs are still there. So.
Okay.
I thought it was good. Let's move along to the alien, which we never learn his name or the name of his species or anything.
Yep.
He's played by Mr. Lippman. Richard Fancy.
That is true, yeah.
Who plays, he's probably best known, at least to the two of us, as the actor who played Mr. Lippman, who was one of Elaine's bosses on Seinfeld. Now, we haven't really had a obvious Seinfeld guest star crossover.
I mean, they are there. They do exist in the hat of episodes. It's just we haven't really come across them.
They certainly do. I feel like when I started watching Next Generation and Deep Space Nine about 3 or 4 years ago, there's a mutual friend of ours, and it seemed like every other episode I was like texting her and saying like, so-and-so from Seinfeld was also on Star Trek.
Right,
It seemed like it happened so often.
Yeah, I guess. And then it's not even the same. Like, Seinfeld was NBC and CBS was... Or sorry, Star Trek was CBS.
Well, Paramount at that time.
Paramount at the time. So I guess it was just across the street maybe or something?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. I'm regretting not using a lot more Mr. Lippman lines throughout the episode now.
Top of the muffin to you.
Yeah. Or like when we were talking about like ideas for episodes. These ideas, they're all in the air. They're all in the air, Elaine. Yeah, so such a waste. Such a waste. Because I actually really do like Harris Shore in that show. Oh, no, sorry, not Harris Shore. Richard Fancy. Yeah, I really like him in Seinfeld. He's really funny. One of my favorite scenes of all time is when he fires George.
Was that wrong?
he has a couple of lines. You know, this was just a paycheck. He's a character actor, obviously. And, yeah, I didn't really have much to say about the alien, to be honest, other than there was that great connection to Seinfeld, which, yeah, I don't know. It's too bad, really. I kind of felt like they could have done more with this, but...
Yeah, he really wasn't in it. I mean, really just that one scene at the end, and that was pretty much it. One thing I would say that kind of stuck out to me is that I don't know if this was intentional or not, But the makeup made him look very creepy. At least I thought it did. Or maybe it was the lighting in the cave. I don't know. But I just, when he sort of walked out, I was like, man, that guy looks pretty creepy.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, with the way that the prosthetics and the makeup looked and stuff like that. I also thought that when he was very offended that Chakotay wouldn't take off his Baltimore Orioles cap, that was a good scene as well.
Yes. Now, Mr. Lippman appears in another Star Trek episode. Do you happen to know which one?
No, I'm assuming it's Enterprise, but I don't know. I have no guess.
He is actually in the Next Generation episode, The First Duty. He was, you may remember that in addition to the Admiral, who was sort of investigating, there was also a Vulcan captain. Mr. Lippman was that Vulcan captain.
Okay, that is, yeah, that's going back. That would have been, what?
Season 7, 6, or no, sorry, season 5.
Okay.
Next Generation.
Yeah, I do not remember that. I mean, I remember the episode, classic episode.
Yeah.
But I do not remember him in it.
He was in it a lot, but he didn't really say much. That brings us to Ensign Wildman. Now, this is a very, very brief appearance for Ensign Wildman, but it was pretty important to the episode because it set up the whole thing with the Doctor. Mm-hmm. Now, she does make quite a few appearances throughout the series. I guess just curious because we never really had an Ensign Wildman episode. What did you think of her character in general?
You know, I like this idea of having a pregnant lady on the Voyager. Because, I mean, there's not that many people. It's very tight quarters. If I remember correctly, there's kind of limitations to when you can use the holodeck and how long and stuff like that. So, I mean, realistically, people would match up, they'd pair up, they'd eventually sleep together. They may have relationships and have kids and stuff. I mean, even the main characters have kids in Voyager. So this is a very realistic thing to have happen. And I kind of like it. And I think that this is just kind of a perfect little way to give that, you know, random background character a little bit of depth. I mean, like there are people on Star Trek Discovery's like bridge crew that you know less about than Ensign Wilder. So...
Yeah, the one thing that kind of bugged me about Voyager is that they had all these secondary characters that, like, sort of came and went and came and went. I mean, we've already talked about Ensign Vorik before.
Yes.
About how he'll, like, be in an episode, then, you know, a year and a half later he'll be in another one, but you don't really learn much about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Wildman is kind of one of those kinds of characters. I mean, aside from the fact that she was pregnant and had a daughter who... I think he's one of the most annoying characters in all of Star Trek history.
Kids can be annoying.
But really, other than that, like, what do we know about her? I mean, I when I was running through this, I was like, I couldn't even think of what her first name was.
I don't know the first name.
I can't think of it off the top of my head either. I would have to look it up.
I feel like when you're writing a show now versus back then, I feel like... writers and fact checkers and stuff like that probably have a much better kind of list. Who's on the ship? What are their names? What are their relationships to one another? Even if they never come up, because I feel like even just kind of in the few episodes we've watched of Voyager, the number of people on the ship seems to change. And one of the things with Voyager that they mentioned early on, but I think they kind of forgot about, was like there was only a limited number of photon torpedoes.
Yep.
And then, like, people have actually counted it up, and it's not even close to what they said they were going to run out of and stuff like that, so...
They had a limited number of torpedoes, but an infinite number of shuttles.
Yeah, funny how that goes, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, if it was a show nowadays, I feel like the characters would be maybe... Well, who knows, though, because they're not really fleshing out certain other characters on certain other Star Trek shows, so I don't know.
I mean, I guess it would be... kind of tricky to get the same actors to come back week after week, you know, but not on a regular basis,
right,
per se. So, I mean, I guess they don't really have a whole lot of choice. Let's move along quickly to the production notes. There's some interesting stuff here. The Doctor's scenes were all filmed in a single day, which is kind of amazing if you think about it, because there's quite a few of those scenes.
Yeah, that's true, I guess, but it's only one set, and... it's only really two people and then the pregnant lady. So I guess it maybe wouldn't be that crazy, an 8-hour day or something. Just go in and just do it.
The one interesting thing about this, though, was that they were not filmed in order. So the Robert Picardo actually had to, like, trace, like, the progression of his illness very carefully. Like, they might have done one scene in the middle, so he'd be like, okay, sick, but not too sick. Okay. And then they would have to go back to the start, and it's like, oh, I'm not sick at all. So I found that was kind of interesting.
He's a good actor.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the hawk that was... this is kind of a funny one. They actually used a, like, trained hawk to swoop down and not really attack Neelix, but in the episode attack Neelix. And this actually turned out to be kind of disastrous, because as they were trying to, like, film that scene, this trained hawk spotted another bird and, like, chased after it.
Mm-hmm.
So it took them, like, several hours to actually find it and, like, bring it back so they could actually finish filming the scene.
It's almost as if they should have just cut that scene.
That would be kind of scary, I think.
For
Ethan Phillips, or maybe, like, they used a stunt double for that.
Yeah.
This, like, hawk, like, swooping down at you. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
you
wouldn't want to watch the birds the night before you filmed that one.
Now, one thing that I did kind of notice, and then when I read it, I vindicated for suspecting this, but there was that scene in the one flashback where they put all their weapons down. Did you notice that they all were, like, kind of old stock props that were sort of made to look, like, kind of dirty and dusty?
I didn't notice that, but I see that you've written it down. Kind of cool.
Yeah, I think one was, like, a phaser from, like, Star Trek 6 or Star Trek 5, and then there was another one that just looked like sort of a generic stock phaser from I can't even remember where.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. Good eye.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. This is only the second episode of Star Trek to use subtitles on the screen, and the first was Next Generation's A Matter of Honor. I found this quite surprising.
Me too. I feel like lots of alien species make for subscripts, but...
Well, if you think about it, though, like, how many instances are they actually
talking
not
their
speaking
own language?
Well, speaking in their own language and in a situation where, like, we're supposed to be able to understand what they're saying?
Yeah, not very often.
Yeah, when I actually kind of thought about it, I was like, well, that maybe is kind of makes sense.
It is a problem with the Universal Translator as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you and I are talking and we're talking different languages and the Universal Translator is altering it, and I say bon appetit, does it come out bon appetit, or does it come out as, like, good, you know, enjoy your meal, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's always one of the downsides.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, they either just speak in English, and you just, the magic of the Universal Translator, or they do the subtitles because it's broken, or because of, like, a situation like this where it's a flashback.
Now, the footage of Voyager descending to the planet, that was reused from the 37s.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not surprising, because I would imagine they were probably still filming with, like, actual physical models at that point.
At this point, yeah, they would have been, right? Yeah, Voyager, I believe, was the last physical prop that they used.
You're probably right, yeah.
And I think, yeah, after that, they went to more of digital stuff.
And one last little bit of, this is kind of trivia, I guess. Chakotay's home planet is not actually named in the episode, but it's hinted very heavily that it is Dorvan 5, which is the planet from Journey's End of Next Generation.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Which is when the Enterprise crew is asked to relocate a group of North Americans.
But those North Americans are the stereotypical ones.
Yes, that's true. It was named in it's called Star Trek Monthly Magazine, I guess. They actually named it, so, I mean, that's semi-official, so I think we can probably reasonably conclude that, you know, this is actually his home world, and that sort of matches up with his story about why he left Starfleet to join the Maquis, because it was, you know, supposedly was to defend his home from Cardassians. So I thought that was kind of, when I read about that, I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah, cool, I like that.
Yeah, many memorable scenes or good lines for you, Andrew, that you picked out of this episode.
I did pick up, there was a very subtle Captain Sulu drop.
Oh.
At one point. I can't remember exactly where it is, but that was a nice little drop-in.
Yeah, didn't, like, Chakotay say he, like, served under him or something?
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of a neat little drop like that. But, I mean, in terms of, like, my quote of the week, easy peasy. I'm assuming that you'll probably use the same one. My simulated virus is leading to my simulated death by the doctor. Just a classic line, and it was, it was perfect. Love that.
I didn't actually choose that one, although mine was also a doctor line. I guess the one scene that kind of stuck out to me was the one at the end when the alien explains how they encountered the Native Americans, and there was that scene is when I started watching this episode and realized that was going to be the one at the end. I remembered that scene, and I thought it was pretty cool the way that they went about showing that.
Okay.
As far as best line, I think the doctor, when he found out that it was Kes that altered his program to make the flu go longer than he had originally programmed it, he goes, she's far more devious than I would have expected.
The doctor is just full of good lines.
It's true. There's quite a few of them in this episode. So if you're a doctor fan, you definitely want to check this one out. How about we just wrap things up here with some final thoughts and a rating out of 5 Soaring Hawks.
Real life trained Soaring Hawks this week. It was okay. It was pretty paint by numbers for me. The doctor thing really salvaged what I think would have been kind of a boring slog of an episode. I think that it's a good idea to give Chakotay an episode. I think that it's kind of neat having a Native American person and their culture and stuff like that being the background. But the way that it was done and the fact that it is such a stretch really took me out of it. And like I said, it's very hard for me to kind of be engaged in this kind of story arc. So I think for that reason, I am going to go with 2 out of 5 Soaring Hawks that I hope don't come down and attack me.
Eat your eyeball.
Right.
5 Soaring Poorly Trained Hawks is what we'll be reading out of this week. I liked it overall. I mean, I didn't think it was a great episode, but I thought it was okay. I think it is a bit far-fetched that Chakotay just happens to find a single alien race that visited his ancestors on Earth 4,000 years earlier, but I mean, maybe space isn't quite as big as it seems.
No, it's really big. No, it definitely is really big.
Okay, fair enough. I would have liked to learn more about the aliens and maybe have them try to explain why they were so afraid of outsiders. But I also like getting the background on Chakotay, who I felt was, you know, really wasn't explored in the early stages of Voyager until this episode rolled along. I really like the explanation of the Native American migration to North America and the influence of the aliens on them when they visited 4,000 years ago. The doctor's story was hilarious, and I thought it was a good balance to maybe the more kind of serious Chakotay story. Yeah, so, I mean, overall, I liked it, and I thought it was good, so I am going to give it 3 poorly trained Soaring Hawks out of 5. I think I hear the red alert sirens, so that means we're close to the end of the podcast here, which means I am going to reach into the expedition hat of episodes and select a fresh new episode for us to review, and Andrew will have 1 minute to tell me what he can about this episode. Andrew, how are you feeling today? Are you confident?
You know what? I'm on a little bit of... Well, I guess I'm not really on that hot of a streak. I feel like I had a couple of good ones in a row, so I'm not too worried this week. I'm crossing my fingers that it's something from maybe early Enterprise or maybe just a flat-out classic episode would be nice because then it would be very easy for me. But anyway, hit me up. What is the series?
Okay, I think you're going to be a little bit disappointed here because this definitely does not meet either of those 2 criteria.
Okay. Series?
Okay, it is from The Next Generation.
The Next Generation, okay.
It is season 2.
Oh, that's not promising at all.
Episode number 10.
So it's... okay. Okay. Season 2, episode 10. It's Next Generation. What are we talking?
The episode is called The Dauphin.
The what?
The Dauphin. Dauphin.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh is right. I'm going to put 1 minute on the clock here and just give Andrew a moment to gather his thoughts. If you're playing along at home, I would suggest you pause the podcast, see what you can remember about this episode. If I were to do the same thing, I would probably have pretty close to a blank sheet of paper because I do not remember much.
Thanks for that, Matt. About the Dauphin.
I don't remember much about this one. But yeah, anything you can think of, the plot, guest stars, trivia,
yeah, that would be nice.
Interesting scenes, funny lines, anything you can think of. And we'll see what Andrew's come up with. He's scribbled down a few things. I got 1 minute on the clock if you're ready.
I think I'm ready.
Okay, your time starts now.
Okay, I am taking a bit of a gamble here. I believe this is the one when the Enterprise comes across a big space creature and they're running scans on it and they're using Troy to try to get an effect of it and they're using the doctor and engineering and it's kind of a big problem that they need to solve, trying to figure out what is wrong with this particular space creature through a series of kind of events or through a bunch of discovery and meetings and things like that. They discover that it's actually pregnant and they see the creature give birth to some young. And then I think that it kind of just ends in a very kind of happy way as the mother and the newborn sail away. Why is it called the Dauphin, you ask? I'm not 100% sure, but I can't remember what the name of that particular episode that I just recalled was, so I sure hope it's this one.
And that's 1 minute. You could be right.
Do you remember what that episode is called, where it gives birth?
I'm not sure.
Maybe, I know, right? That's why I kind of took a bit of a gamble on this one, but that is kind of the fun of it when you're... When you're on the podium, when it's your week,
yeah.
You have to come up with something. It maybe was a bit risky. Maybe I should have been a bit more vague, but I feel like, go big or go home.
Well, you got to say something. Those are the rules.
That's the rule. So hopefully you, playing at home, have watched TNG Season 2 more recently than I, and hopefully you have a full page of, quotes and trivia and little pieces that you can... check with next week when you score it.
And get 5 Dauphins out of 5. All right, that's all the time we have. Thanks so much for joining us on Random Trek Review, and we hope you will join us next time on RTR as we take a look at the Dauphin. ¶¶